Welcome in to Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass, and on today's show, we discuss the heartbreak that transpired just hours ago in Portland for the Brooklyn Nets, their playoff chances moving forward, and enough with the goddamn turnovers. I'm sick of it. Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here. You can get the podcast on the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Nets. Joining me is my boy Marcus Barahal. Marcus, we did not podcast with each other last week, which is a rarity. I think we did three solo pods. Was it two me, one you? But I really missed you.
I missed you too. It was two yous and one me. You're correct. I was sandwiched in the middle there, I think.
It was an umu.
Yeah.
You, me, you.
Yeah. That is what they call it in the biz. But it's good to be back with you. I missed hearing your voice and seeing you over Google Hangout, as we're doing right now.
I know. Absolutely. It's always good. I'm wearing a polo now. I'm about to head off to work as soon as I get this done. But the Nets, unfortunately, kept us up really late last night. That was just a brutal, it was a really fun game. The first half, I was loving this. I'm saying, oh my God, this is like one of my favorite games of the year. Third quarter, really good. Fourth quarter, really good with the Nets getting off to that very hot start with D'Angelo Russell on the bench. And then it all started to, the collapse, I guess, started with 1 point. It was a 1 point game. The Nets were up in the fourth quarter. The Nets had the ball. There was about a 3 to 4 second differential on the shot clock. And D'Angelo Russell was just dribbling and lost the handle on Seth Curry. Seth Curry picked his pocket because D'Lo got a little sloppy with the ball. Seth Curry had it and then was fouled with 3.5 seconds left by Spencer Dinwiddie. He kind of just ran right into Dinwiddie's arm, and he didn't do a good job of kind of getting out of the way to avoid the foul. Seth Curry goes to the line, makes one of two, and then the Nets have a chance to win it with a heave by D'Angelo Russell. He rims out on a 40-footer. It would have been an insane shot. We've seen insane shots happen with that Jeremy Lamb one last night. Then we go into the double overtime. Obviously, the absolutely horrific and devastating Yusuf Nurkic injury. And then when it's all said and done, the Nets are sad because they just lost a gutting a game they should have won, just a really terrible defeat. And now they're right in the morass with Orlando and Miami. And then Portland's also sad because of the Yusuf Nurkic injury. So I hate when both teams leave the game sad.
Yeah, it was a super weird game. It felt like it just got even weirder like as the game progressed, like you said. And Portland, I think, clinched a playoff spot with the win, but they were like obviously not in like
celebrating
mood after the injury, which was like terrible. I watched it when they showed
it. Get that out of the way. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I thought that what the Nets did in terms of like showing it, or I was watching it on the YES broadcast, in terms of showing it, but like giving like multiple warnings right beforehand, like this is very graphic, like if you want to look away, do so now because we're about to show it. And they like warned us a couple times, then they showed it, and of course I still looked, and I probably shouldn't have. It was like really just tough to watch, and could just tell from the reactions of like Dudley and D'Lo and everyone kind of just like covering their faces with their jersey as they ran away. Tough to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I consider myself a tough guy, you know. When Yes is saying, "Oh, it's very graphic. Look away if you feel bad about this kind of stuff, and you like it's not going to be good for you, whatever the language they used." So I'm thinking, "Oh, like you know, it's fine." And it really was like gruesome to watch, and it's tough to stomach that. And I think on first glance, it looked a lot worse than the Caris LeVert thing. Honestly, it was just very Gordon Hayward like. Obviously not to this level, but like a Kevin Ware at Louisville injury. It was just absolutely horrific. And you feel for Yusuf Nurkic because he's someone when he started his career in Denver, kind of was in and out of the rotation, showed some promise, but also probably he's worked a lot on his game, you know, and his story is really cool about his dad was like a police officer in Bosnia. And then some guy went there just trying to find the biggest man they could and being like, I'm going to train your son in basketball, and to see where he's at today. And he's had a great season for the Blazers. a very important part of their success. So it's just, it's gutting for him, you know? It was tough to finish out the game on that note.
Yeah, and he, like, the Nets couldn't really stop him. Like, obviously,
he's
both Jared Allen and Ed Davis fouled out in the overtime, so it was, like, tough because it was, like, basically Jared Dudley guarding him for a good stretch there before he got hurt. But even still, he had 32, 16, and 5 with 4 blocks and 2 steals, and he was, like, I mean, with McCollum out, it was pretty obvious that he was, like, the second-best player, like, by far on Portland. I mean, he probably played the best in this game, but just...
Yeah, he was unstoppable. I mean, yeah, even with Jared Allen and Ed Davis, they still couldn't stop him. He just babied Jared Allen the whole night, and it sucks to see that. It's going to probably be a long road to recovery, but shouts out to Yusuf Nurkic for being what seems like a really good guy, and obviously hope he gets better soon, because definitely tough to watch, and you never want to see that happen to absolutely anyone in this league.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where you kind of take a step back and like remember that this is just a game, and like these are people's lives.
Just a game.
But yeah, I think the Nets were probably a little bit shook after it, and Portland was too. Like, I don't think either team like did much after that, like in the immediate aftermath. I know Rodney Hood hit a three, but it felt like everyone was kind of like a little confused. I kind of wanted Kenny to take a timeout just to calm everybody down, but yeah.
Yeah, well, the Nets didn't take it super well. I mean, everyone thought they were just, like, outraged by a foul call, and then realized that they were all just looking at Yusuf Nurkic's leg. And I don't blame them. If I was that close to it right up front, I would probably react even more than Jared Dudley did, if that was possible.
Yeah, I was, like, thinking about it. Like, I can't even imagine if this happened in, like, a pickup game or something that we were at. Not to get all, like, God. Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo talking about, like, pickup.
Yeah.
But, like, if this happened, like, in front, I don't even know how I'd react. I would probably just start screaming.
Yeah, that's and I hope you never have to experience that.
Yeah, same.
So yeah, that was that. The Nets lost in double overtime. Kind of the big dagger here was that Rodney Hood three, which made it a 7-point game. The Nets were able to get a bit closer. Joe Harris and Damari Carroll both hit threes, and they cut it within two. But at the end of the game, Portland was 4-for-4 on key free throws, and free throws were a huge issue for the Nets in this game. D'Angelo Russell especially was the main culprit for someone that is usually very good from the line, was only 4-for-8. Jarrett Allen was 4-for-8 as well, and they finished 31-for-44 from the free throw line. Obviously, not what you want. They need to be able to be more consistent in these games. When you're going on the road and facing a really good Portland team, you can't turn the ball over, which they did. They turned the ball over, 9 times in the last 15 minutes of action. That's terrible. You can't miss free throws. And if you do that, you're not going to be able to beat Portland, even if they don't have CJ McCollum. They're just too talented and too well coached to lose at home to a team that's making mistakes like that.
Yeah, the Nets missed 2 key free throws late in regulation. I think Joe Harris split a pair, and then D'Lo also split a pair. And like at the time, I was thinking like, oh, that could be bad. If they come back, like that's what you can look at. Because that would have, if they'd hit both of those, it would have been a 5-point game instead of a 3-point game at that point. And then that's obviously a completely different like conversation. But yeah, that's kind of like what's been like lurking for the Nets the last like month or two, where if they're playing a bad team, they kind of just get away with not making their free throws. But in a game like this, obviously on the road against a team that is going to win probably 50 games this year, it's really tough if you're making like sloppy mistakes that are like not being forced by the other team, like an unforced error basically.
Yeah, you got to make your free throws, and we have to go to break right now, but coming back we'll talk a bit more about how we got to that point of the double overtimes, and a bit more about the regulation of that game, including D'Angelo Russell's pretty solid game and Caris LeVert's best performance since he returned, coming up. We got a new sponsor for the pod, y'all, and that is our friends at Wyze. W-Y-Z-E, but they call it Wyze because it's a Wyze camera. It is the indoor camera that does it all. It's packed with premium features that allows you to see everything in your house from anywhere for only $20. Images so clear you won't miss a thing, they have it. Night vision, they have it. Two-way audio, 1080 full HD. They got it all. Wyze's mission is to cut out the channel fat by selling directly from their own website. They want to bring amazing smart home products accessible to everyone. Check in your home anytime with Wyze's app live stream. Important to note, That is a free rolling 14-day cloud storage on these cameras, as well as no subscriptions. For $20 a camera, you can do anything. You can watch your kids destroy your house. Marcus, I'm not sure if you have any kids recently that I don't know about, but you could watch them destroy your house.
I do not.
You can do bird watching. Really, you can do it all. I can watch my roommates fight without when I'm not there, and I love watching them fight. So that's kind of going to be my big draw. And for just $10 more, Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast. Your camera should, too. Go to wyze.com/locked. That's wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Marcus, I love Wyze.
Yeah, it's a Wyze company, I would say.
It is a Wyze company. I like that. And the Nets they're usually a Wyze team led by Kenny Atkinson. There are a couple problems that I have with Kenny last night, though. Can I tell you them?
For sure. Run down the list for me.
One, Joe Harris did not have it last night. And I love Joe Harris, but he was struggling. And LeVert, we can talk about him, had his best game since coming back. I think 16 points, 5 of 8 from the field, got to the line 6 times, 7 assists, only 1 turnover. How does he only play 24 minutes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. He wouldn't still be on like a minutes restriction, because we've seen him play more in games where he's not playing as well, which is interesting. But yeah, I guess they were kind of riding D'Lo and Dinwiddie, who both played over 40 minutes in the game, so there wasn't like a
working.
Ton of... No, I know. Yeah, I mean, D'Lo played well, and Dinwiddie wasn't like terrible. I thought LeVert probably could have gotten more minutes, but it wasn't like atrocious from my view. I don't know.
It was bad from my view. I feel like Joe Harris was he was a drag for the Nets in the end of the fourth quarter and the overtimes, and he did get a couple key offensive rebounds, and he always plays hard, but he just didn't have his shot there. So I think D'Lo especially looked very...
Sorry, would you have played like all three of them together?
Yeah.
And LeVert?
That's like what they did in it was earlier on in the game when they did that. Mm-hmm. But LeVert was playing really well. D'Lo was struggling a little bit. I think D'Lo honestly took too many shots. He seemed definitely tired. And you have Dinwiddie, who it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but Dinwiddie is a more efficient scorer than D'Lo. So there was, I think, for 3.5 minutes of the first overtime, he didn't touch the ball until he hit that big three. So you have to give him more opportunity. It can't just be the D'Angelo Russell show, especially when the other guys on the team aren't playing super well, like a Joe Harris and a Jarrett Allen, because, you know, D'Lo can obviously get insanely hot, and we've seen that this year. But if he doesn't have it, it's not like you just have no one to pair him with. You do have Spencer Dinwiddie, you do have Caris LeVert, so I would have liked to see a bit more shot diversification.
Yeah, I think that that's just about the mindset that D'Lo probably had while everyone was out, where it was like, all right, like I have to be the guy every time. And it's probably still an adjustment to think like, if I like, I guess it's almost like self-awareness, like realizing like I don't quite have it tonight, let me give it off to one of these other guys who maybe does. Like Dinwiddie, like you said, was fine, and LeVert was playing really well. He was hitting a lot of shots that I just had gotten used to him missing at this point.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, what? You're not supposed to hit those.
Yeah, it was good to see, though. A guy who I thought was really good, not to like completely change the topic, was Ed Davis, who did foul out, but just like I thought that his fight was really good, and obviously he like used to play in Portland, so he's maybe like a little more motivated, but yeah, it was frustrating that he fouled out, but I thought that he had a good impact while he was in.
Yeah, it was tough because between the Ed Davis and Jarrett Allen minute split, Jarrett Allen had a horrible game. Like, just really unbelievably bad. And Ed Davis was playing reasonably well. And then Ed Davis picked up his fifth foul with about 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And then from there, if you're Kenny, I was surprised that he didn't take Davis out, say, okay, Allen, you're gonna play for the next 4 or 5 minutes, and then we'll give Ed rest, we'll save him from foul trouble, and then we'll bring him back in. But he actually went with Ed Davis basically the entire way, and I thought he actually got lucky that Ed didn't get called for his sixth foul earlier.
Yeah, there were a lot of fouls in this game. Like,
there's also a lot of uncalled fouls.
Yeah,
both.
Yeah, but considering that like Davis and Allen and Dinwiddie fouled out, Carroll had 5 fouls. And then, like, even for Portland, like, it wasn't a one-sided thing. Like, for Portland, they had 5 different guys who had 4 fouls or more. So the refs were kind of, like, a little heavy-handed in this one, I thought.
Yeah, I feel like I thought they were actually calling a really good game. But then in like towards the end of the fourth quarter and the overtimes, there were a couple plays where Nurkic would just come like barreling in on an offense on once a shot went up, and it was a clear over the back foul or a clear push, and they just didn't call anything. And it's like, one, Ed Davis and Jared Allen are giving up 40 pounds, and then you have to give them some slack. So I don't know. I thought the officials definitely missed a couple calls of travel here or there on Portland, but overall they did a pretty decent job.
Yeah, and I think just on that rebounding point, I thought Jared Dudley actually did like a pretty decent job of like boxing out, given his size difference. And Joe Harris, who wasn't shooting well, he obviously contributed a lot on the rebounding front as well late. So it was like a good team effort by the Nets to kind of stick in it, even though they like just didn't have a big man for like the whole second overtime and some of the first. So.
Yeah. Is it a weakness that the Nets don't have a true third center on the active
roster?
I don't think so.
I don't think that this situation is going to like come up very often where both guys foul out and it's like a double overtime game, so it's like extra needed. I think they have enough, especially like in the NBA today where you're not going to play two of those three guys hypothetically at one time. So like in most games you're talking about a third guy who would maybe be playing like 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a big hole.
Yeah, but you need a break in case of emergency guy.
That should have been Rondé.
I know.
The hero.
It wasn't that much of an emergency. No. And then also my other Kenny Atkinson point was that Carroll, and I guess it's fine because he ended up playing 36 minutes, and he's not exact. You don't want to just wear him down because he's shown that he can be susceptible to injury in the past. But in the lineup where Joe Harris was struggling, you could have gone to LeVert or you could have gone to DMC. So I would have been fine with an Ed Davis, Jared Dudley, Damari Carroll, Dinwiddie, D'Lo closing five. But alas, Kenny saw it different than me. That's fine. But before we head to break, let's talk a little bit about Jared Dudley, who was so good in this game. 6 of 8 from three, had two layups, which looked like they were in slow motion in the first quarter. I was just loving what he was doing on the court.
Yeah, the back-to-back layups were really good to see. And then he hit a three at one point where I was watching it.
And the four-point play.
Yeah, I was watching at a friend of the pod, Gavin, and Jeremy was there, our other friend of the pod.
Guess I didn't get the invite.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll talk next time. But when Dudley hit a three, I, like, stood up and did his, like, run with the three fingers along the floor. I, like, did that for, like, a solid, like, 20-foot stretch. Then I came back to keep watching the game. But he's just really fun to watch. I mean, just the way he plays and his energy, he dove for that one loose ball and like called the timeout immediately. It's just something about him just really makes me smile.
Yeah, I want to be as happy in life as Jared Dudley is when he scores. Guy's so
incredible.
Happy. He also definitely can't dunk after tonight. After watching
tonight. There's no way.
Not even close. Yeah, oh my god, I love Jared Dudley so much.
I was
much.
So happy when he made the fast break layup, though. I was like very nervous he was going to miss it.
He played really well.
Yeah.
Like actually contributed a ton for 35 minutes. Also, his chase down block in the second overtime.
That should
overtime.
Have been a jump ball. That was incredible.
Should have been. Who was it on? Harkless? Harkless should be embarrassed.
I think it was Rodney Hood.
Yeah, I think Rodney Hood should be absolutely embarrassed that that Jared Dudley blocked him.
Yeah, do you think that a terrible missed call that they didn't call that a jump ball? Because it was a 2-point game at the time, and then Portland wound up getting it on the side and inbounding, getting two free throws right away. So, like, they probably would have won the tip anyway, given that it's Jared Dudley who would have been jumping. But what'd you think about that?
Yeah, well, never say never, because Spencer Dinwiddie did win a tip against Jusuf Nurkic. But I'm partial to calling that out of bounds the way they did. I mean, ideally, I wish that the refs watched a bit more college basketball and they would have called it a jump immediately. But it didn't happen. I don't know. I don't think it was an egregious missed call, but obviously I would have loved for them to give it our way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It seemed like a jump ball, but that's obviously not something they can change after the fact. And yeah, I think it would have ended up being the same result.
Yeah, and the Nets screwed themselves over by getting down so big in that second overtime. So yeah, you can't blame the refs for that. So we will take a break and then preview the Nets' upcoming next game or two and talk a bit more about where they are in the playoff landscape. So remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Nets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In every expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Nets and our friends elsewhere on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll be right back. Last segment here on Locked On Nets. Marcus, take us through the schedule the Nets have over the next game or two and kind of where they sit right now within the playoff landscape.
Sure. So the next game is Thursday against Philly. In Philly, it's the last game of that like crazy long road trip. The Nets are 2-4 on the road trip so far, which is like about what I expected, I think, and like kind of like what they needed to do to remain where they've been in the standings, like in that 6-7 spot. So this home stretch will be big coming up after that, because then they have Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto all at home, which is going to be tough. But at the same time, I think that with Milwaukee now 4 games up on Toronto for the 1 seed and Toronto 4 games up on Philly for the 2 seed,
perfect.
I think that those teams might, maybe not in like every game, obviously, but the Nets might catch a break with some guys being rested. And Malcolm Brogdon's out, and I think Mirotić is as well for Milwaukee. Yes. So it's definitely possible that the Nets get one of these teams not at full strength.
Yep, absolutely. So there's that. I'm thinking that ideally by the April 6th game at Milwaukee, they'll have clinched already. And then hopefully the April 7th game, that's a back-to-back, at Indiana. Indiana's clinched a home court advantage as the 4 seed. If the Nets win one of those 2 games, that's going to be huge. Unfortunately, Philly really screwed us last night by getting destroyed by the red-hot Orlando Magic, who have won 5 in a row now. Between that and the Nets losing this heartbreaker, it was a tough day yesterday for Nets. You know, if they had won against Portland, we would have been sitting pretty, being able to go out west and win the last 3 games in a row, including that crazy comeback over Sacramento and beating LeBron. You know, those are great wins, but you'd like to see this stretch capped off the win, but unfortunately it's not. The Nets right now they're tied with Detroit. They are a game up on Miami and a game and a half up on Orlando, and then it's 3 games up on Charlotte, and then Washington is basically all but mathematically eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, and the good thing with the Orlando thing is at least the Nets have the tiebreaker, so that's like a little bit extra, but still only a game difference in the loss column. So it's going to come down to the wire. That last game against Miami might end up being for like a playoff spot.
Yeah, definitely could be for the 8 seed. One team that I think people have been sleeping on is Detroit, in terms of that their schedule is pretty tough right now because they're at Denver, then home against Orlando, and obviously that's not going to be an easy game right now. Then they're playing Portland, Indiana, Oklahoma City. So that next stretch of 6 games is really tough. They could easily just go 2-4. The saving grace for them is that they end the season with home against Charlotte, home against Memphis, and at the Knicks. So definitely they're going to beat the Knicks. But you know, this is a team that if they go, let's say, 3-6 over their next 9, who knows if the Nets could even tie it up with them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the Nets have winnable games like we talked about. So they're still a game over 500 now. And I kind of expect them to get to at least 40 wins. I don't know about you, but I think that that's like pretty reasonable. And then from there, I would be surprised if they miss the playoffs with that number of wins in the East, I think.
Yeah, if they get 40 wins, they'll have the tiebreaker over Orlando and Detroit, and then possibly Miami. So, I would have been feeling a lot better if they had won last night. Now I'm going to be nervous up until Thursday. There's a big game tonight. I think Miami and Orlando are playing, so that will be a big one to watch. And then in addition to that, so Detroit's playing Denver as well tonight. So if Denver wins, I will be feeling good about myself. And then Orlando and Miami, who are we rooting for?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's tricky.
Maybe Miami, just to kind of, like, because they're ahead right
get
now.
Get separation, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, get a little
bit. We just need to get in the playoffs. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if Miami wins against Orlando, that would be good. Order would be restored to the world. But, Marcus, when are we talking again? Thursday after the Philly game? What do you want to do?
Yeah. The Philly game is at 7. Yeah, sure.
Why not, right? We'll do a live reaction. We will be back in your ears then. Until then, you can follow Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Bearhall. Follow me at JMBass_, and follow the podcast account, more importantly, to hear both of our perspectives at Locked On Nets. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review, please. We'd really appreciate it. Thank you again for listening. And remember, you can get this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play Locked On Nets. We'll see you soon.
Bye.